Hey there, true believers. Welcome to another Muddy... Oh, wait, this isn't the Muddy Marvel Podcast. What is this? Oh, Superhero Speak. Oh, yeah, you're with Dave, Ben, and John. I'm Jeff Sutter. I'm a senior art director at Marvel Comics, and you are listening to Superhero Speak.
That's right, boys and girls. Welcome to the continuing adventures of Superhero Speak, Episode 20. And that's right, this week our guest is none other than Jeff Sutter, the senior art director over at Marvel Comics. We sat down with Jeff and talked about how he got into the business and what it's like to host the Mighty Marvel podcast along with his music. So this was a great conversation. It was real fun sitting down with him, and we hope you enjoy. So here we go. Hey everyone, you're listening to Superhero Speak. I'm your host Dave.
This is Ben.
And John.
And this week, we have a guest who you might not know his name, but if you're a Marvel fan, you should. Not only is he a talented musician, he is also a podcast host. He hosts the Mighty Marvel podcast. But on top of all of that, he is the senior art director over at Marvel Comics. Everyone, welcome John Sutter. Sorry. I was so worried about saying Sutter, but I said John instead of Jeff.
I can change my name to John. Really, it doesn't matter at this point. I've been in this business 16 and a half years. So.
All right. I'll try that again. Everyone, welcome Jeff Sutter to the show.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm Yeah, it was a long day, long busy day, but every day is busy. But today was particularly weird, putting out a lot of fires. But that's the business, so that's what I do. And boy, thanks for having me on.
So actually, I'm glad you said that, because for our listeners who are not familiar with what a senior art director does, could you explain that a little bit?
No one is familiar with it. My mother doesn't even know what a senior... I've been in publishing for 25 years, and mm-hmm. she still doesn't... my girlfriend, she doesn't really... She's not sure. If I can break it down, basically, I oversee the Marvel brand when it comes to graphics, and that can be anything from... our monthly catalog, Marvel Previews, which I've been doing for literally 16 and a half years, which was like the first project that I got when I started back in 1997. And that crosses over into, well, basically it's marketing in general. So I work on the catalog, which is the most important book that we publish, because that's what retailers use as their sales tool and their ordering tool. So it's literally the most important book that we publish. Granted, we don't do 250,000 like Infinity, but it's what reaches the retailers who reach the fans. And then that crosses over into advertising, meaning the ads that you see in Marvel Comics.
Mm-hmm.
Everything from ads that are for comic books to, I'll even do, licensed products. It's Spider-Man toothbrushes and you name it. If it has one of our characters and a logo on it, I will and probably have worked on it at some capacity. I also do all the posters that you see in a comic book store, what we refer to as retail posters that you can buy rolled up, or they come, we give free ones to the comic book stores to hang up to promote our products. We do mini posters, which are two-sided things that on a monthly basis that give them another outlet to reach out to fans. Anything from giveaways that you'll get in comic book stores, postcards, buttons. I designed the convention booths for our major conventions.
Cool.
I do the video editing for the video reels that run in the convention booths. I host the Mighty Marvel podcast. Which has been somewhat infrequent over the last 9 months, only because my schedule has been so insane on the publishing end. We have had so many big events over the last year. It's just, I between getting creator schedules down and my schedule down and my normal working day is just, insane. for what most people would say is insane, but that's how I work and how I like to work. It makes my day go fast, and I love my job, so it's not even, it's good stress is what I call it. I compose and perform music for video production that is used on Marvel.com.
Hmm. Okay.
You know, shorts that we do or animated pieces that we do. Honestly, it's whatever needs, I'm capable of producing within the company. I'm the in-house art department, and my client is Marvel Comics.
Yeah, it actually sounds like you have a good job for marrying business and art, you know, and it seems like a very good job to have.
Well, it's creative and it's diverse at the
right.
same time, and a lot of times people can have a creative job you don't have that diversity because you're doing the same creative job over and over and over and over. Like if you just made logos,
mm-hmm.
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I get to create logos when a logo is needed for a certain project.
Right.
You know, I'll do comic book covers. I do a lot of variant covers. And I get to be involved in the whole creative process, you know, everything from TV and animation to, you know, not so hands-on with the movies, but certainly promoting the movies, you know, within
mm-hmm.
the publishing end. So I get, you know, my dirty fingers are in everything.
Nice. Well, then I can say that whether they know it or not, my kids are definitely fans of your work.
Well, that's the whole thing is I literally am. I'm one of the guys behind the curtain.
Yeah.
I'm not alone. I don't have an art staff of designers, but I have, you know, I'm part of a team of, you know, writers, copywriters, and sales guys that their jobs are to make sure that, you know, the word is getting out and, you know, press guys and I work with every single editorial office. Every single editor knows me and works with me on a daily basis. Our brand assurance, who does our licensing products, I work with them on a daily basis. Marvel.com people, you know, Ryan Penagos is, you know, I've known him since the day he started, you know what I'm saying? Like,
mm-hmm.
I work with everyone. Dan Buckley and you know, Joe Quesada is an old friend. And I remember Joe's first day in the office when we took in Marvel Knights, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I remember going upstairs and getting the pencils to Daredevil number one from Joe so that I could bring it downstairs and scan it.
Cool.
You know, like it's that capacity is I am a cog in the machine.
Cool. So then to back up a little bit,
mm-hmm.
you know, is that something you went to school for? Did you kind of fall into it? I mean, you didn't always work at Marvel, right? I mean, sure, you worked at other places before that.
Well, no, yeah. I started, to give you an idea of my background, kind of as a young age, I started in the marketing world, when I was 9 years old, because
mm-hmm.
I was doing TV commercials when I was a kid. I've done about 80 national TV commercials. I've done about 120 voiceovers, a lot of commercials from the early 80s. You know, I've done an Underoos commercial, which was actually influential into me becoming an artist, because the artist that was on in the studio when we were doing that commercial to draw the characters on the monitor so that the directors could see where the character was going to be next to the kid
mm-hmm.
was John Romita Sr.
Oh,
nice.
Cool.
Who became my boss 25 years later.
Right.
So
that is surreal.
Yeah. So get to, you know, fast forward to high school, and I was a little too old to sell toys, and I was a little too young to do beer commercials. And in the 80s, there really wasn't this tween demographic. You know, there
yeah,
wasn't
right.
this demographic that we have now. And I said, you know, my dad was a printer, and we had a printing press in the basement. And I said, you know, I really like art, and I started stripping film and learned how to run a press, and I got into printing. And so I got out of high school, and I was an art director in a print shop while going to school at night in Passaic County Community College, and I took design courses. And within 2 years, I was a senior art director at an advertising agency, and then I ran a photography company for 8 years, that switched over to digital. Back then, you know, we were still doing film and everything by hand, And I was lucky enough to be in a company that when they switched over to digital, I was there to get hands-on. And I was still in my 20s, so I was young, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And one of our clients later on in like my eighth year in that company was Marvel Comics. And we did a catalog for them. And the creative director, who was Vito Incravalle at the time, was my client. And he came about 2 months after that job that we did, and he said, hey, do you know any designers? I'm looking for somebody to work on catalog and marketing materials. And I said, I think I know someone who's interested, Vito. Let me send his resume over. And, of course, I sent mine and my portfolio. And I had an interview, and they took me on for a two-week trial. So I literally had to quit my job of 8 years to take a two-week trial at Marvel. And you got to remember, Marvel was Chapter 11 at the time.
Yes.
It was a bankrupt company. And it was a real risk for me, and I'm not a risk taker. You know, I'm a total Virgo, and, you know, I need to know, you know, that I get up in the morning and go to an office, and that's just the way I'm in. I need that focus.
Mm-hmm.
And I took the chance, and 16 and a half years later, I'm still here.
Well, that was a good risk to take.
Yeah, but who knows? You know, and again, right. I was in my 20s at the time, too, so...
Yeah.
I didn't have that mortality gene yet.
So since you were in the Under Roos commercial and you met John Romita Sr., and were you a comic books, into comic books when you were a kid?
I wasn't. You know what I was? Okay. And this will, and it's not that I'm not a comic fan.
Mm-hmm.
I at the time, I was into Mad Magazine. Yes, mm-hmm. I was, you know, 12 years old, and I was reading political commentary. So, you know,
right.
That was my thing. Is right. So, but what I did is I was really into strips. So I became a comic book illustrator, strips.
Mm-hmm.
And I refined my art, and I became actually a technical illustrator for a couple years, doing stuff for like Sony and Sharp and. And that was, you know, very, very boring, but I got very, very good at it.
Right.
And I learned, you know, from the bottom up, you know, perspective, all of these. I'm more of a technical guy. I could probably draw Iron Man a lot better than Hulk, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I'm a pen and ink guy. And I did that for many. I mean, I worked on an art board long enough that, you know, I had a very, very bad back by the time I was in my middle 20s.
Sure.
Thankfully, you know, I sprung back from that when computers came around. But nice. Yeah, so that was my original goal, was to be an illustrator. And, you know, once you start doing it for a certain amount of time, you have to be honest with yourself and say, you know what, I can do this, or you know what, there are too many other guys that are 10 times better than me. So
right.
I found I had a really good eye for, at that point, I had a really good eye for design. And the actual physical execution of layouts. And, you know, this is when we were still doing stuff with paper and wax and stack hammers and stuff like that. And I was just good at it. It was just my thing. I had a good eye. I was fast. And that's the most important thing in, you know, a production business, is that it's a good quality product, but you got to do it quickly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no one's sitting around waiting for this stuff. You better deliver. And working with clientele, and I was really into customer service and all that. So when the opportunity came with Marvel, knowing that it was an in-house design job,
mm-hmm.
I really wanted that, because I didn't have to deal with outside clients. I didn't have to worry about, you know, the amount of hours I was working on a certain project, even though,
yeah.
you know, I was doing that myself, but I wasn't having someone stand over me, tell me, this is doing an hour. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And I had done that for so long, and I was so burnt out, you know, in the advertising field. It really can burn you out and really make you hate the business, and which is probably a good reason why there's so many angry people in advertising. But thankfully, being in an in-house position, I had this flexibility that I had never known before, and I was just like, wow, this is wonderful. And, you know, nobody gets rich, you know, in an in-house position. It's just the way it is. You're staff. Mm-hmm.
Right, right.
You know, it's not, I don't own my own, you know, if I had stayed in the advertising agency, I probably would, you know, at this point in my, you know, I'm going to be 45 this year. I probably would have been a partner or something, you know, but
right.
also I'd be bald and, you know, probably die a heart attack in 2 years. So.
Yeah, that's true.
That's just the way that business is. So thankfully, you know, I'm absolutely blessed, and it's all about timing, and it's all about, you know, who, not necessarily who you know, but positioning yourself to communicate and at least make a good impression on someone. And, you know, I'm not a jerk to people, and there's a lot of people that are very talented, and they feel like they need to project themselves a little more than they have to. And I would just kind of, it's just not my personality. So I think that served me well. My mom raised a good kid, I guess.
Yeah. I was chuckling a little bit at some of the things you were saying, because the three of us actually all work together. That's how this got started, and we work for a online advertising company. So, so we're all going to go.
Oh yeah, that's a little stress, right?
Yeah.
Although we're crunch any numbers with that.
We're all technical people, though. We don't have to worry about the actual advertising.
So no, that's true.
Oh, okay. All right. I I can understand that, because I'm working in production for so long. You know, I knew what I was capable of and what I was good at, and I made sure people knew what I was good at, and not to say, oh, I can do that, and have no idea. You know, I mean, there is a certain amount of baptism by fire in whatever you do, especially when you're younger and, you know, you're starting out. But I pretty much said, you know, yes to any project, and if I excelled at it, then I kept doing it, you know. And if I didn't, then I always said, you know what, that's really not my thing, you know. Because
right.
I can, to this day, I can tell you right now, I'm just not really good at web graphics and all that. It's so confined, and there's so many formats now. You got to do it this size and this size and this size, because it has to work on a Droid, it has to work on an iPhone. It's just like, I love paper, you know. I want to see it on paper. I want to smell the ink, you know. I'm still old school in that way, and. You know, there's enough crossover where I do enough digital work where I'm sure, in my personal opinion, print will always exist at some extent. So I'm not too worried about that.
Yeah, that's fair.
Well, yeah, and I guess speaking of, you know, print versus digital as well, you know, what do you think about the more and more push into digital comics?
Well, you know what? I'm lucky enough to say that I was in probably some of the first meetings at Marvel to even bring up the topic and discuss digital anything. You know, I mean, when I started there, you know, it was MarvelOnline.com. You know, it was
right.
You know, only on AOL,
right.
And here's the thing. You want to be a dinosaur, you're going to end up with the dinosaurs. You have to look at where a trend is going. And it's not even a trend now. It's just it's a
just
fact.
Is, yeah. Right.
You know what I'm saying? I'm sure there's no industry that can stay stagnant, except for maybe like if you're a farmer.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, you know, And even that, there's so much technical things going on with farming or you know, I mean, any kind of, you know, in industry in general. You have to be able to take the next steps and take it to where it's going and what people want. And in
right.
you look at digital comics, you know, I look at them on my iPad, it's just like, oh my God, this looks beautiful, and it's consistent, and it's not like it's a printing press where, you know, the colors can shift from copy 10,000 to 15,000. You know, I know that's, you know, what I'm saying is kind of on a technical end, kind of an inside thing, but it's true. And you look at these digital comics, and then you add in things like AR, where, you know, you point your phone at a printed piece, and now you get this whole video multimedia thing on your iPhone that adds to the experience to the print. So you say, okay, well, it's print, and then you went digital, and then you went back to print and made the print part interactive with the digital part, and it's like, you know, your face is melting.
Right.
You know, so being in those early meetings, and these were mostly meetings like with Bill Gemmis and Joe Quesada, and, you know, really guys who were taking the company and totally by the horns. And say, no, you have to go where the people want it to go. And that's where it was going at the time.
Yeah.
And, listen, unless you're in the ground floor, you're not an innovator.
Right.
And Marvel is absolutely an innovator when it comes to digital comics. There's absolutely no question about that. You know, we may not have been the first, but absolutely we created a new arc.
No, I can agree with that as well, because I've started reading a lot more than I used to, just through the I've got the Marvel Unlimited subscription, and I've started reading back issues of things that I had missed in the past.
Out of pure convenience.
Exactly, and it's that's where it needs to be. That's what people want, and it's great to see that type of stuff is now being offered.
Right, and then that is what separated a lot of the old school guys who just simply said, no, this is the way it's always been done, and this is the way it needs to be done. You know what? A lot of those guys aren't around right now, and you know, and God bless them for what they did, and they were innovators at the time. But if you're not going to be part of the you know, evolution, you're gonna lose out on, and that's the bottom line.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think it's a great way to augment my collection. You know, like I still like having my long boxes.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm also one of those people, like, when I meet the artist or the writer, I want them to sign something, and they can't sign
my
iPad.
Yeah, you don't want them to sign your iPad, exactly.
Right. you know, when I finally got to meet Stan Lee last year, it was like, you know, that was the main thing. Like, I had to have something for him to sign, you know, to say, hey, look, I met him, you know. But the idea of the Unlimited, where I can go back and have the entire catalog for issues I might never be able to buy, you know, it is a great tool.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean,
it matches the consumer, too, these days. I mean, like, you've got Netflix that just put out 13 episodes all at once of that series. I forget what it is. And it's what consumers are looking for these days.
Yeah.
They can, like, take me. I haven't collected comic books in a little bit, and I'm getting back into it. And, you know, it'd be nice to go back and read an entire year's worth of story instead of having to go search for all of them. And it's going to drive a whole lot more people to go back into the current stories, because they'll be able to go back and see what the story is up until that point and continue on from there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's where the beauty of where the current Marvel Cinematic Universe has opened up the Marvel Universe to people who knew nothing about it.
Yeah.
And now they can go online and they'd be like, oh wow, you know, and I can read all these other, you know, all these other things, and the whole, wow, I had no idea, you know, because I just only saw that one movie and I had never seen Iron Man before, and you know, it opens up all these completely new doors to a new audience, and you know, personally, I'm a trade paperback guy. I just don't have the patience for single issues. You know, I have my collection of my select collection, and you know, I'm blessed to the, you know, I get, you know, my comics, I get my comics back every week.
Mm-hmm.
But I pick and choose, but when I want to read something, I will, you know, seek out the trade paperback, or just like you said, go right on Unlimited, and it's there, and you know, I could sit there all night and read an entire, you know, 3-year arc.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah. It's funny because I think that's probably the reason I've you know, been delving into digital too, because I am a trade back paperback person myself. Like, I'd gotten out of collecting for a while, and then when Civil War came out, it was like that sucked me back in. But I wanted to read House of M and Avengers Disassembled beforehand, but I wasn't going to go back.
Now you're talking about a couple $100 of comic books.
Yeah. Exactly, but instead of seeking out the single issues, I just got the trade paperbacks of those and read them, you know, and it was a lot easier that way. But yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
But now it's like, okay, now I'll just go and go to my online store and download it and read it that way.
Exactly, and you know, it's just to touch back. Go back, say, into 1999, 2000,
mm-hmm.
When, you know, we were trying to reinvent this company that everybody said, no, it's dead. Print's dead. Comics are dead. The 90s killed it. You know, the collecting market is gone. you know, Wizard magazine was slowly falling into pieces. You know what I'm saying? Like,
mm-hmm.
all those things were happening all at the same time. And Bill Gemmis and Joe Quesada said, you know what? We need a trade paperback. We need to implement trade paperbacks in a way that had never been done before, which is absolutely collecting every single issue of every arc of every book, whether it's sold or not, and
mm-hmm.
to put it into a collection and put it into the mainstream, get it into the Barnes & Nobles, get it to, well, ultimately what is now, you know, Amazon, get it to all of these major bookstores, Walmarts, the you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could go to Macy's and get a trade paperback. You know what I'm saying? Like, so that was the stepping stone to the digital comics.
Right.
That is what ultimately probably funded the digital revolution within Marvel and also opened up an entirely new group of people that were going in and seeing these books, like I said, in the Walmarts and in, you know, the major book chains. Again, it's just, you know, evolution is one step at a time. You know, it's one little layer at a time. It's like an onion.
Yeah, it's funny because around that time, in 2000, I actually worked in the publishing industry. I worked for TV Guide. And
okay, so you are, you know, firsthand then.
Exactly. So I was there for 3 years, and it's so funny. Quite the opposite happened, I think, to TV Guide. One of the biggest things that hurt them was digital, in the sense of they created the on-screen guide, and they were our data was feeding that.
Right.
You know, so people were like, "Why do I need to buy the book? I just turn on the TV, right?" And it's you know, slowly decayed, and of course I was laid off, and everyone, I don't know anyone that works there anymore. I don't even think they're the same company anymore. They've been bought out like twice.
But what you're saying is that basically the same exact information, and which would be the same exact files that would
mm-hmm.
create a printed piece, was simply, you know, in an Excel document, and it was being uploaded to a program that sorted it and then listed it and then would feed it onto your TV.
Right.
The problem with that was that they didn't make it subscribable.
Right, exactly.
Where they could turn a profit from it with no overhead, because
mm-hmm.
you're taking the same information and you're just putting it in a different format.
Right.
And it was they didn't think it through. They thought, well, this is a one-off, you know, you hear the old saying, oh, it's a fad, it'll be gone in, you know, it'll be gone in 2 years. It's, people said that about digital comics. You know, and I'm going back a decade now, and look at where we are now.
Oh yeah, I actually had said to my boss at the time, who he was one of those guys that had been there when they brought the mainframe in, so he had been there that long, and I was saying, you know, I see that the publishing is starting to drop. Like I foresee a day where you can probably have it on your phone, and you can just change your channel through your phone and that kind of thing. Ah, you're crazy. That'll never happen. And you know, now I can download the Xfinity app and control my TV through my phone. It's like...
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, you got to see that my Optimum app is just insane. I can't even figure it out. It's it has so many options.
I wish I had pushed it a little bit more, you know?
Yeah,
you know, and that's, again, that, you know, that's what separates, you know, the guys that are, you know, running the show now, you
mm-hmm.
know, I mean, you look at these guys, I mean, you know, Joe Quesada is a comic book illustrator.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's now the creative director of the Marvel Universe. You know what I'm saying? Like he's the not only to say puppet master, but we like to call him that, you know, in the office, but he is directing things based on what's possible. You know, he told me one time, he goes, you know what? He goes, think like Stan would think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Stan, there was nothing Stan couldn't do. Stan, you look at Fantastic Four number one.
Right.
On the front of Fantastic Four number one, the first thing you read at the very top of that comic book, do you guys know what it says?
I don't know.
It says,
the world's greatest comic magazine.
That's right, yes.
It wasn't even printed when he came up with that.
Yeah.
He was telling you, this is the world's greatest comic magazine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, you know what? We fell for it, and he was right.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay? So I'm one of these guys. I was lucky enough to spend about 25 minutes alone with Stan a couple years back. We were actually backstage at New York Comic Con, and I had him signing some stuff for promo purposes, and nothing for me. Actually, I don't even have a picture of us together, and I don't have anything that he's ever personally signed for me. I have a guitar. I have a guitar he signed. Other than that, and we sat there for about 25 minutes, and you know what we talked about? We talked about gardening. We talked about my commute. At the time, my commute was 2 hours each way in and out of the city. We talked about the ducks that went to his pool, because at the time I had a koi pond, a 3,000-gallon koi pond. And that's what we talked about. And he at the end, he shook my hand and gave me a hug, and he goes, you know what, Sutter, you got a book in you. And you know what? I'm going to take his word to heart, and I promise myself, when Stan Lee tells you I got a book in me, I'm going to write a book.
Right, yeah.
So,
you don't turn him down on that.
You know what I'm saying? You don't turn it. But I have the guitar. Anyway, that's fine.
So
where do you feel like the digital is going? I mean, do you see like Marvel ever sunsetting the actual physical publishing, or you know, are you going to continue to try and monetize that and use that as a hook to get into the digital world, or vice versa?
Well, I think my personal opinion is that the publishing's, I don't see publishing ending. I think people will always want, there will always be at least a fan base that will want a physical copy to bag and board, yeah, to be able to get signed, to hang on the wall. I mean, I'm guilty on that. You know, I have a few long boxes. I don't have a lot. You would think that I would have a lot, but at one point I probably had 20,000 comics, and I'm probably down to about maybe 5,000 now. You know, how many long boxes is that? Maybe what, 10? I don't even know. It's minimal in its physical, but it's very select, and I have a couple of good selections in there. I just think that will always exist, especially with renewable paper supply now. You know, and it's not like you can't even say that, you know, and the ink is better and it lasts longer and it's UV protected, and I just don't think that industry is going to go away. I think it absolutely is part of the genre. It will never not exist, as far as I'm concerned. This is my personal opinion. But digital comics is what it is. It's giving everyone with a digital device an opportunity to be exposed to the Marvel Universe. Yeah. And that's ultimately the most important part. It exactly the same way that the movies do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the movie, does every person that goes see, you know, Wolverine go out and buy a Wolverine book? No, absolutely not. Do a bunch? Yes, they do.
Certainly.
And that drives a part of the publishing industry. And we support each other. You know, it's the same way the animated series on, you know, Disney XD. You know, we're publishing Disney XD stuff. We're not doing it because, you know, people don't want it. We're doing it because people do want it.
Yeah.
And you know what? You don't always want to hand an iPad to a six-year-old.
No. No, that's true.
So you actually...
There's a tangible... There's something that's about a tangible, comic book. It's still art. It's still storytelling. It's still, you know... It takes talented people to make these things, and art will always exist. It's, I mean, the day it doesn't, you know, put me in a box. I'm done.
You know, and I think you're right. Because I've never been a big collector myself. I read them when I can, and I've definitely gotten into the digital subscription model with Marvel Unlimited, but I've definitely found the things that I've read in there has changed how I look at things when I am at the comic shop. And I look at things that I would have otherwise walked by.
Sure.
And so it is a good vehicle for seeing more things that, you know, because what's the harm in when you have the subscription, reading a couple things, you know, because it's all covered. You've already paid your dime, and that may drive you to collect other things that you wouldn't have thought to collect before.
Absolutely. And you know what? And social media influences all those things too. Honestly, for the first time ever in history, you know, fanboys have a place to go and freak out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, and I'm the first one to admit it. I am I'm a troll. I have almost 10,000 followers on Twitter, and you know, I love them all dearly, and I'm, you know, I really, my social media presence as a Marvel guy is really just interacting, and as opposed to, you know, calling people on stuff and, you know, and arguments and mm-hmm. that, I'm not into that. I'm really about the humanizing part of the Marvel experience, which has always existed. You know, Stan yeah. had Stan Soapbox. Stan was a real guy to real people my age growing up
mm-hmm.
on a monthly basis. Oh, what's Stan got to say? What's he talking about?
Right.
You know? Yeah. And when social media really first broke, I was lucky enough to be in at the ground level. You know, it was me, Joe Quesada, you know, even Bill Jemis, you know, was doing it early on and then it took on to the next step where, you know, Marvel.com had a major presence on Twitter and Facebook and all these things. And all of these different platforms all point to one direction, and that's the Marvel Universe. And you know what? That's what I do for a living. That's my boss. And whatever helps to expand that universe and whatever helps to get people to talk about it, I don't care if you're arguing about it. That's fine, you know, but you know, and then you get into the whole, oh, well, DC, blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, you don't understand. DC success is success for the industry. What's good for the industry is good for everybody.
Yeah.
So, you know, when DC knocks it out of the park, it's good for everyone, you know.
Sure.
Maybe not in the last year, but.
So, John, it's okay that you like DC.
Well, you know, I have a lot of friends at DC, and I love them all dearly. I just, I think they have a different, it's a different vibe than the Marvel Universe. The Marvel Universe yeah. tends to be maybe a little less dark. I mean, we have our dark moments.
You know,
we kill a lot of people. you know, we have our dark
while.
Moments, but I think. Overall, you know, and people complain about, oh, you guys reboot everything every, you know, 5 years. Or, you know what, though? Do we really reboot it? No, we don't reboot it. Do we reinvent it? No, you can't really reinvent that. What you do is you adjust and,
right.
and you,
right.
you evolve with your audience. You know? I mean,
oh,
I'm 45 years old, and I'm 45 years old, and I'm all for moving on to the next phase, you know? There are guys that are just stuck in, you know, 1987. I'm sorry, you know, for that. That it, things are not exactly yeah. the same way as that. But
right, but no, you can't tell the same Spider-Man story month in, month out. You have to, you know, you have to evolve these characters.
Yeah.
And, you know, for them to still.
So,
be
what do you guys think about Superior Spider-Man? Go ahead.
So
sound off. Go, geek number one. Go.
I just started reading recently. And I find it interesting. It's clearly a different take, a different approach. I tend to be of the mindset that somehow things are going to get back to normal, just because of I see it as a very different character, and I think that I think it's purposely somewhat meant to be a character that you're not sure how you feel about him, to sort of spark some intrigue there. I like it. It's definitely a departure, but I think it's an interesting one. So.
Okay, so I'm going to address what you just said there.
Mm-hmm.
Is probably the best entertainment in the world is when the audience is uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And Ben Stiller proved that.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? That's a fact.
Yeah.
That you can hate it and still not stop watching.
That's
and,
true.
And everybody keeps forgetting that the character isn't Peter Parker.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different character. He's
right.
not the same person. He's not going to act the same.
Right.
And it makes you uncomfortable. And look, for you know, good or ill, it is what it is. But in my opinion, it elevated at least the people are talking about it. Let's just say that people are talking about it. Whether it's good or bad, people are talking about it. And no one can say that Dan Slott can't write.
No, definitely.
Yeah, no, the writing is great.
I mean,
great.
The guy can write. So he's just – maybe he's not writing anything you're comfortable with. Maybe you're outside your comfort zone. Is
that
a bad thing?
At the same time, it's it may not be the Spider-Man you want, but it's believable. I mean, it's a character that makes sense. Like, if you can see that if Doc Ock was you know, was put in that body, that's the way he's going to act. And it fits, and it's, you can go along with that ride, and it feels natural.
Exactly.
Whether you like it or not, it does feel natural.
I think.
And wouldn't you kiss Mary Jane?
Absolutely.
Okay. Exactly.
I think the long lines of good entertainment is, you know, it's not what you expect. You know, it's not the norm. I think another thing, you know, movie wise, that was brilliant. And a lot of people didn't like this is the whole training of the Mandarin in Iron Man 3.
Oh boy.
Because all the previews and everything leading up to that, you were expecting something completely different. And even up until I'm sitting there in the theater, and even up to the point when Tony Stark breaks into the mansion, and he confronts
alert.
Him. Yeah, well, we have a big, we already did an episode all about it.
We spoiled the crap out of it.
Yeah, we spoiled the crap out of it.
I was just kidding.
Yeah, yeah.
you know, even at first, when he first walked in, he's tricking him. And then when I realized, oh no, this is, you know, he is an actor. I loved it, you know, because I wasn't expecting it. I was entertained. It was a left turn I wasn't expecting, and it was done well, you know. And it's the same thing with Superior Spider-Man. Like, yeah, I have minor issues with it. You know, Peter Parker's always been my Spider-Man. But, you know, I've got to get out of 1987 and enjoy something different, you know. I guess the only thing that I didn't like about Superior Spider-Man is some of the things he's done makes it look like that Doc Ock was more intelligent than Peter Parker. You know, and that's the only thing that bothered me. You know, coming up with the little spider cameras and putting them all over the city. It's like, well, why didn't Peter never think of that, you know?
Yeah, but Peter didn't have the funding for that.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Mm.
All right, you got me.
He had the funding for the web shooters and all the webbing, somehow.
Well, sometimes.
Look, that was 1962, man.
Yeah.
Things were cheaper then.
It's been a long time since I've collected comic books.
He stockpiled those chemicals back then.
Stop ruining it.
Don't throw logic into it.
Yeah, I know.
All right, so who didn't we hear from?
John, you have an opinion on Superior Spider-Man?
Well, I like...
Hated
I like
it!
What?
Sorry.
Well, compared to Superman, no, wait, no, I can't do that. No, seriously, I like a smarter, I don't like plot lines that move along because the protagonist and antagonist are stupid. So the fact that he put out all of those cameras all over the place and he's got the Goblin Protocol and turning it off and whatever, and he's got all this other stuff going on. I like the fact that he's smart. Because when you think about it, you know, any villain could take out any superhero, and unless the superhero is really smart about it, and that's what this new Otto Peter is doing.
Right.
So it's nice to see that, you know, no, it would not be easy to, you know, figure out where he is at some point and take him out from a mile and a half with a sniper rifle, because he'd probably see you coming with all the cameras, and you know, it's good. I I like it. I still miss Peter Parker, but, you know, it's like you said, you have to evolve.
Yeah.
And if you don't evolve, then things get boring. You wind up telling the same story over and over again.
But how can you miss him? He's there the whole time.
Okay. All right. So, I mean, you guys know Marvel's track record when it comes to its heroes.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think, what do you think is going to happen?
Well, generally, from...
See, I'm usually the interviewer, so
yeah,
go
yeah.
ahead.
No, I'm of the mindset, yeah, and you're right. There's, you know, historically, there's a lot of change that happens. All, you know, these changes happen, and things always tend to slowly bounce back. So I have to believe that there's probably some event somewhere down the storyline where Peter finds a way to take his body back or something along those lines.
Help him.
Or yeah, it just seems like an inevitable conclusion to this arc. How long the arc will take to get there is anybody's guess.
Well, like the arc could go on for a while because there's a lot of things you could explore with this arc. But
true.
Yeah, you know, I'd say it was planned. I'd say you already know how Peter's coming back when you decided to kill him off. I think you already knew. I think whoever is writing this is already knowing how that's going to happen. He's just biding his time, exploring the new, nooks and crannies, and once that's done.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not Dan Slott, and I won't speak for him. But yeah, I mean, and it's one of those things. Like you said, you threw out there who would help him. I mean, the first person that comes to my mind is Doctor Strange. But yeah, I don't even see how you really would do it at this point. I do, you know. And like John said, you know, explore it as long as you can, because like you said, people are talking about it. You know, you like it or not like it, people are reading it and talking about it. But no, I mean, it's a different take. You know, I think it could last for a while. But yeah, given the track record, I think he's coming back, but I don't know how.
You gotta love the people that don't like it. Now, you know, every time a new comic comes out, they're like, oh, did you read this? This sucks because of this, this, and this. Well, why do you keep reading it? Why are you still buying it?
Exactly. It's like everybody freaked out when, you know, Jean Grey was killed off, and, you know, yeah. I mean, whoever we killed off, everybody freaked out.
Each time.
But it's a different world now, and, you know, back then you could do a quick fix, you know, it's just like, oh, you know, boom, you know, reality changed, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's...
Life model Igor.
You can also liken it to the other character that was just recently killed over at DC, which was Damian Wayne in Batman Incorporated. But Grant Morrison ended his run on Batman Incorporated with the graves are dug up, you know? Like, Bruce Wayne finds Damian's grave and it's dug up. And then they show the final panel and there's, like, all these clones of him. So... You know, yeah, they killed him, but right at the end of this summer, they brought him back again, you know?
Yeah, well, everybody freaked out at the end of Killing Joke when you know, it's, well, did Batman kill the Joker? Did he? He didn't kill the Joker. No, he would never do that. But, you know, if you look at that last panel, it looks like he killed Joker. So, you know, I like open-ended stuff.
Right.
You know, personally, I mean, as a fan, I like open-ended stories. I don't need to be. I like to come up with stuff myself. But then the Virgo in me kicks in and goes. I need to know what happens and this stuff. So I'm a little conflicted in that. But being in the industry, I try to embrace the open endedness and you know, look, you know, it's comics.
Yeah.
It's fiction. You know, it can go anywhere. And you know, and I always say Dan's got a plan. So.
Right.
Stay tuned, kids. That's all I'm saying on that.
Got me in.
So, you actually, you know, you had said you normally do the interviewing. So I was kind of curious, how did the Mighty Marvel podcast come up? Was that something you suggested, or did Marvel said we needed a podcast and they asked you to host it?
Okay. The marketing director at the time, who was my boss, and I don't even remember what year it was, but it was... God, it was definitely pre-Civil War. I don't even remember. You know, we have a lot of creative retreats mm-hmm. where all writers will get together and basically go over a 2-year plan, and to make sure that everybody who's writing the major books, you know, one, don't either plan on crossing over with storylines, or to avoid conflicts and stuff like mm-hmm. that. In characters and story development. So, Joe Quesada went to John Doakes, who was the marketing director at the time, and said, you know, people are doing these things called podcasts. And basically it's a radio show, and you record a radio show and you just put on Marvel.com. So, John's like, well, we don't have a recording studio, we don't have a recording booth, we don't have any of this thing. So Joe goes, well, Sutter's a musician, he records, because Joe and I had you know, jammed and we had recorded some stuff together, mm-hmm. and he goes, let him figure it out. So the first couple podcasts, which I don't even think were called the Mighty Marvel. It might have even been called the Mighty Marvel podcast. It's still on the website. You can still go to, like, podcast number one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was a Mighty Marvel podcast. But and it was just a roundtable discussion, and it was Bendis, Straczynski,
oh,
me, Joe Quesada, Doakes, Mark Millar. I know he likes to be called Miller now, but back then it was Millar for some reason. Brubaker.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it was like a powerhouse. Like,
yeah, I can see why they left that up.
It was like a lunch break from the creative retreat. I'm not kidding.
Nice.
And, you know, a couple editors, I think Tom Brevoort was there, and Ralph Macchio, I think, at the time. And we were in this room with no air conditioning, and it was my laptop,
mm-hmm.
my two condenser mics,
mm-hmm.
and I bought all the equipment, basically, to be able to pull off a podcast. I think I put out like $250 or something,
mm-hmm.
and I was thinking to myself, you know, this will be good. You know, this is. I just had incentive at the time. I was like, this is something I'm really into, and I think I can do well. And I recorded the whole, you know, basically this roundtable discussion of the Marvel Universe at the time, and it was really, you know, unorganized, and it sounded like shit, and you know, it was like all over the place, and it was. So we did a couple like that, and. At one point, someone like who John Doakes at the time was like hosting it, and then Jim McCann actually hosted a couple. And I was like, "This is so loose, and so we got to do something with this." And I just took the bull by the horns, and I was like, "You know what? I'm going to do the next one." And I set it up, and I did a one-on-one. I think it was with Howard Jenkin, or Neil Gaiman, it was like a major thing. I just sat mm-hmm. down with this guy, and I just went like, "Hey there, true believers! Welcome to another Mighty Marvel podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Sutter. I'm the senior art director here at the House of Ideas, and we are talking." And I just rolled it out.
Yeah,
and mm-hmm. I just blew through it, and it was about 19 or 25 minutes, and everybody in the office was like, "Oh, dude, you have to do this."
Yeah.
And I've been doing it ever since. So that's, and you know, I'm 134 podcasts in, something like that.
Something like that. Let's see.
And, yeah. And you name them, I've interviewed them, you know, Stanley, everybody. I mean, there's really nobody. There's no one off the top of my head. I mean, Scotty Young and, Bendis has been on at least 11 or 17 times. That guy can talk. Oh, you know, Greg Pak. Oh, I go like this. Now when I interview Greg Pak, I just go, "Greg, comics, go." That guy will talk for like 90 minutes.
Nice.
Love him. And, you know, and that's that. I mean, that's, you know, I don't know what to tell you. You know, go to Marvel.com and, yeah, and look up it. Go up to the news drag down. You'll find podcasts, and they're all there.
Yeah, I was actually listening to one the other day. I think it was they were talking about the Jeff Loeb. That was it. Yeah, with the
Jeff's been on a ton. Jeff, you know what the beauty of Jeff? Jeff calls in from his car as he's driving to his office on the LA freeway. So he's got a lot of time.
Yes.
You know, and he's sitting in there in his BMW. And he'll just, and he's another one. You just, you know, Jeff, go.
Yes.
You know, a pleasure. And, you know, these are all guys, you know, Chris Claremont sat in the office across from me for 2 years. You know, I don't think we said good morning once. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just, I just know all these guys and I, you know, get them on the phone and I just grill them for a little while.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. We had J.G. Jones on the podcast, and I've known him for a long time.
He's a nice guy.
And but I never had a really long conversation with him until he was on the podcast, you know. And but yeah, so it's funny. You can know people for a long time, but never really talk to them. So
absolutely.
It's
absolutely
a great excuse.
And
that was
the thing with me and Chris. Yeah.
So actually, you know, I had another question related to the podcast. Did you write the theme music for that? That little bit that plays,
you know,
in the beginning?
I wrote, actually, for probably the first 25 or 30 episodes, that is actually music that I just created off the top of my head. I mean, I'm a keyboardist. Mm-hmm. I'm a guitarist.
Right.
My main thing is I'm the lead singer in my band, but you know, it's pretty easy for me to come up with pretty generic music, which is why I do a lot of the stuff for Marvel.com. But I'll be honest with you, I found this canned piece of music, which is like a blues thing, like a slide guitar thing. That's probably what you heard.
Yes.
And that's just like a canned piece, like in GarageBand. And I love it. And I love it. Right. And it's, you know what? I don't have to pay money for it, and the lawyers are happy. Because, you know, I own it, so,
right,
you know, it is what it is. But it's funny that you say that, because that music actually is, when I did a thing at New York Comic Con, they actually played that music, because it's associated with me, so.
Right.
I guess I'm probably the most famous person to use that canned piece of music, I think. But I've heard it in a lot of other different things. I've even heard it on, like, a national commercial.
Oh, okay.
And I'll pick it out. You know what I'm saying? If I hear it, I'll be like, hey, that's mine. You know?
Like the Wilhelm scream.
Yeah, you know. I mean, you know, I've been in the same cover band for, 22 years.
Wow.
So cover music to me is kind of, like, you know, I that's my thing. So when I hear that music, it's just mine. It's just the way, same way if I sing a Pearl Jam song, it's, I sing it like I wrote it, so it is
right.
What it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny that you, a lot of the stuff you said, because that's kind of how we got how I decided to do this and got started was, you know, I'm a musician, so I knew about recording, and it was like, oh, you know, Ben and I would always have these conversations at work about comic books, and I was like, we should record these and make them a podcast. But yeah, I know how it is. It's like, oh, well, you know how to do this stuff.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, that's exactly what happened in the office in Marvel Comics. You know,
right.
Joe Quesada said, well, Sutter could do this.
Yeah.
You know, get his ass down here. What is he doing? He's just sitting there.
So.
You know?
Can't be doing anything important.
But yeah, no, nothing.
No.
No, I'm just, you know, trying to market, you know, $1 million a month. That's all.
Right.
Yeah, and the band's called Hardcover, right?
Exactly, yes, Hardcover.
Yes.
And you can check it out at hardcoverrocks.net. Yes, it's a .net. What do you want from me?
I watched the two clips you have on there, and I was, you know, don't take this the wrong way, but I was pleasantly surprised. I mean, you have a really good voice.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I've been doing it a long time.
Yeah.
So I'm well rehearsed. Yeah, so, you know, yeah, I play 2 to 3 gigs a month, and you know, that's my thing, and that's just my thing. That's, you know, that I'm a part-time musician. Obviously, it's not my full-time job. Right. If I could do it full-time, I don't think I would, you know, because I love it. And it's just one of those things. And the guys in my band, I wouldn't be with guys for 22 years if it wasn't, you know, these aren't just my friends, you know, mm-hmm. it's my family. You know, yeah. I watched their children grow up. You know, we've been through divorces. We've been through new relationships. My kids are you know, hang out with their kids. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's family.
Yeah.
And Janice, my better half, is absolutely my biggest fan, and which is, you know, the biggest blessing I could, you know, ever imagine.
Right.
So, she's like my manager. She goes, oh no, you should do this song. You know, oh no, you guys should totally play this place. Or, you know, like, oh no, don't play it. No, you can't play for that kind of money. That's crap. So, it's a part-time job, but mm-hmm. it's also, you know, our leisure, you know,
yeah.
me and my girl, that's, you know, even though I'm working, that's our leisure.
Wow. As another musician, I have to say, you're pretty lucky to have a group like that too, because I've tried doing it, and it's just finding the right guys to gel with who can agree to kind of things like, you know, well, let's just play a couple times a month, you know, because you get younger guys and like they want to go out and do it all the time, and it's tough, you know.
Well,
so.
We all have, you know, look, we all have families, we all
right.
have day jobs, and we all have the same priorities. And, you know, we all grew up in the same, you know, part of New Jersey. I play, you know, northern New Jersey and southern New York State, pretty much the tri-state area is pretty much all we play. But, you know, I mean, because this is where we are, you know.
And
we have, you know, we have kids and families and day jobs, and that's just – and we make the best of it. And my guys are the absolute they are the absolute best band in northern New Jersey, and there's – just no doubt about it, and I'm honored every time I got on stage with them. I mean, truth.
Cool. And yeah, like I said, the you know, the clips are really good. So,
thank you. Well, you can go to my YouTube. If you just look up Jeff Sutter on YouTube.
Okay.
I got a whole feed there, and you know, I bought a one of those really awesome Zoom cameras a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I've recorded a whole bunch of stuff. And I mean, we do everything from, you know, Aretha Franklin to Zeppelin to, you know, Pearl Jam, Nirvana, and, you know, Drowning Pool. And I mean, we do heavy, heavy, heavy stuff. And we do some really kick-ass Motown and blues. So.
Nice.
All right. I think everyone who's listening to this podcast who's in North Jersey or New York should check them out.
No, you come out. Come on. Go to hardcoverrocks.net.
Wow. So with all that, I mean, you know, music, being the senior art director, doing the podcast, when do you find time to breathe?
Well, you know, I got a 10-year-old girl in the house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you just don't. You hold your breath. I breathe, you know, honestly, I breathe. I'm at my desk at 7:30 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm generally having dinner by 5:30
mm-hmm.
with the kids and Jan, and I hold my breath from time I get home until I get to the office.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean in that sense, though. I mean, I have a 19-year-old and a 10-year-old, so it's
wow, yeah, oh, that's diverse.
Yes. And the 19-year-old's the girl, so, you know, that's where all the problems come in.
Yeah.
Oh, you poor bastard. We got a 16-year-old boy in the house, and he's like an honor roll student, and he's starting JV football this year, and
cool.
He's a pleasure. He's a good kid, and honestly, I mean, I have nothing to bitch about. Generally, anything I have to bitch about is that really at the end of the day doesn't matter.
Right. Yeah. That's true.
You know.
So are your kids as big comic book fans as you are?
No, neither one.
No?
No. No. They got their things. You know, we
sure.
Gigi, that's the girl, and we love Adventure Time. We do our Adventure Time stuff together.
Mm.
She loves Disney stuff, which is, you know, very good because, you know, I work for Disney, so. And he's really into video games and sports and, you know, loves Halo and all that. And I gave him the Halo graphic novels, and he liked them. And he loves to read and stuff like that. He loves Shakespeare and stuff like that. So, you know, I look, my parents let me roll with whatever I was into, and, and I will let these kids roll, you know.
Yeah, right.
No, that's fair.
And,
absolutely.
And I've only been a dad for a year, so, you know, I'm still new at it. And, but I'm really good at it, so.
Nice.
Well,
I think I am. I'll wake up dead one night.
Yeah.
So
they are still alive, then you're doing a good job.
Yeah.
Thanks, man.
So you're the stepdad then?
Yeah.
No, I mean, because my daughter's my stepdaughter, and you know.
Yeah, well, it's a whole different thing. You know,
right?
It's,
yes.
You know, but it's all about trust, and it's all about
exactly.
You know, trust. I guess it's about trust. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And being a good person, trying to teach them, like, you know, be a good person. That's all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm new at it, you know, but you know, but look, I, you know, I've always been a huge dog lover, so you know, it's really not much different.
No. Yeah, you put the food out for them, scratch it behind the ear. It's all good.
Well, you know, metaphorically, yeah.
That's what I do with my stepdaughter.
Like strange dogs.
There you go. Plus, you know, cold beer helps.
For your stepdaughter or you?
That's on the circumstance.
That would be me. Okay. You know.
You had mentioned the posters. That you're in charge of the posters. So I have to bring this up. And I didn't think about it until I heard it on. Do you listen to any other podcasts? Do you ever listen to Hollywood Babylon with Kevin Smith and Ralph?
No, I've heard it. Really, the Smogcast is something that I actually listened to fairly often a couple years ago, just because he's freaking hilarious. But you know, I've been made aware of it and told, and it's just, you know, honestly, I just don't have enough hours in the day to put it into my schedule, and it's like. Now, and actually, within the last year, I've actually been able to, like, say to myself, I've been wanting to do this. So tell me what I need to do.
Well, what they brought up, I didn't notice this until they mentioned it on the podcast. Ralph Garman brought this up, is with the Iron Man 3 poster and the Thor Dark World poster. Are basically the same exact poster. They just it's just the same people in the same different people, but in the same exact poses. So I need to ask.
I saw that on actually one of the fan sites.
Okay, so are you responsible for that?
No. I don't do the studio stuff.
Okay.
Poster wise, that's different posters than what I was talking about. I was talking about the retail posters that you can go into a comic book store and buy.
Oh, okay.
You know, for like all new X-Men number one or, you know, Infinity number one. And those are the posters that I work on.
Okay.
I really can't speak on what the studio guys do.
Okay.
I'm going to leave it at that.
That's probably safe.
Come on. They're doing it right.
Sure. Speaking of the posters that you are responsible for,
yes.
Will there be one for the Phineas and Ferb Marvel crossover?
Mm.
Which I just recorded.
Do you want one?
By the way,
do you want one?
My kids would love one.
Phineas and Ferb. Yeah.
All right. I'll tell you what. Tomorrow morning, when I get to my desk, I will compose an email to the president of sales.
Okay.
And I will suggest it. How about
that? Excellent. That would be great.
I can't guarantee anything.
No, obviously not.
However, with that said, if that doesn't happen, on a mass production level, it's very, very hard. I mean, you, when you're talking crossover stuff, you got a lot of lawyers and all that. If that doesn't happen, I will personally print you out an oversized one, and I will send it to you.
Well, that is a...
All right, you have my email. We've been on that stupid email chain for the last 2 days.
Yeah. I'm responsible for that, but
nah, who's that, Dave?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh no, all good.
No, it's so funny.
Come on, dude. I get 350 emails a day. Those are the fun emails.
It's so funny because, even my 10-year-old, who he watches Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon. He didn't watch it at first, and then when he started watching it, he really liked it. But he's a huge Phineas and Ferb fan as well.
Oh, we just watched it the other day, and oh my God, Gigi was so, her name is Giovanna, but you know her nickname is Gigi.
Mm-hmm.
She was so excited. She was like, "Look, we were literally sitting at dinner,
yeah,
and it came on, and she's like, Jeff, it's Marvel and Phineas and Ferb."
Exactly.
She literally freaked out, and I was like,
yeah.
See, this is, and she had no idea, like anything that I had known about it, or you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, she didn't get all that, but I was like, yeah, I was like, I told you about this. She was like, you did? I was like, yeah.
Yeah, it was such a great idea. I mean, and it hit the target
audience.
It was
so fun. Oh
yeah.
My God, it was so fun, too.
Oh, and there's so many, the jokes, like, we actually were in New York City on vacation just this past weekend when it premiered. And it's the only television we watched from the hotel while we were there. And it was
hilarious, right?
It was great. It was hilarious. Yeah, so many little jokes. And as Phineas and Ferb always is, you know, it just, but that combination was great.
But there were a lot of like inside jokes too. It was like, you know, like even, you know what it is in, it's funny because I was actually, talking, to Jan about this is I was like, you know, we were able to take, like inside stuff about the movies,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
and the comics, and then the animated series of Phineas and Ferb, and like all combine these, and like, you know, I'll get one joke, she'll get one joke,
mm-hmm.
this other one will get, you know what I'm saying? It was
right.
Like,
yeah.
You know, it's the way the old Warner Brothers cartoons used to be.
Yeah,
it was like so many little inside jokes, and like you could watch a 1950s Warner Brothers cartoon, you know, Bugs Bunny or something like that. You mm-hmm. could watch it with your dad. And your dad would laugh about stuff, you know, because they were jokes about, like, either political commentary
or
celebrities that you would never get. And then something funny would happen with Bugs, and you would laugh.
Right.
And I think they really did a great job.
Yeah,
seriously.
Absolutely.
It was really good. And I look forward to sitting down, like, and really analyzing it a little more. You know, we were eating at the time. But, good call on that one.
My, When it came on, and they have Stan Lee in the beginning as the hot dog salesman.
Yeah.
And my son's still, like, he's 10, and he's not an idiot, but he still doesn't quite get who Stan Lee is. Like, I try to explain to him, and he doesn't quite get it.
Yeah, I have the same problem.
So he's like, oh, is he in everything? And then, because he recognizes.
Right, it's that guy that's in every one of the movies.
Right, the voice is instantly recognizable.
Right.
And,
Right, true believers.
Yeah. But at the end, when he was in Danville now trying to sell hot dogs, he laughed at that. So I thought that was great.
Do you know what – okay. All right. Nerd alert.
Mm-hmm.
What a Marvel movie – it doesn't have to be an actual Marvel cinematic movie, but it's one of the Marvel movies. Was Stan Lee selling hot dogs?
Hmm.
I remember.
Come on. Oh, you guys are really disappointing me.
I mean,
the fact that I know this is just ridiculous.
No, I mean, well, because he played so many different...
cameos, right.
Cameos.
Yeah, but, I mean, he was only selling hot dogs in one.
Oh, shoot. Mm. No, I'm not picturing it. I'm drawing a blank.
X-Men.
X-Men? Okay.
When Senator Kelly was coming out of the water naked, he was selling hot dogs.
Oh. Okay, because that's the one cameo that a lot of people miss as well.
You know, I don't know how anyone could miss it. He actually had two cameos in that movie.
Right.
I forget what he was a security guard in that one also.
Yes.
I think.
Right. Well, he was also a security guard.
The major one was that he dropped the hot dog.
Right.
He was at the hot dog stand when Senator Kelly walked out of the water naked.
Right.
All right, that's my geek alert just went off.
Yeah,
I think
failed there, unfortunately, but that was a good one.
I think one of the best things about one of the best comments I ever saw was recently when he was being interviewed and said that he didn't get to do a cameo in The Wolverine, and he's like, it's probably going to flop, you know, and it's like, That made me laugh, but then I saw the numbers. I'm like, ooh, maybe that's true.
Hey, Stan, man, you don't argue with that guy.
No.
Oh, no.
He told me how to have a book, so I'm going to go with that.
Yep.
What's the name of the book?
Oh, don't put me on the... Come on.
We've mentioned it twice now, so now we have to ask questions.
Yeah. Well, look, I haven't even started. Well, actually, I did start.
All right, is it fiction or nonfiction?
I, you know what? I'm going to have to get back to you on that.
Okay.
It's going to be really clever, though.
All right. We'll look forward to it.
Yeah, oh, thanks.
No pressure.
I'll sell at least 3.
Okay, there you go.
No, 4, my mom.
All right. Well, and your daughter, right?
No, she won't. She won't. She's 10.
Oh, all right.
She can't read this book.
Is there anything you want us to throw up on our site? Any links? You've got Twitter. You've got you mentioned another.
Yeah, I'm Jeff Sutter on Twitter. I'm Jeff Sutter on YouTube, and I'm not really into like aliases and shit like that. So yeah. You do a Google on me, and it's all there.
Sure. Yeah. Is there anything in particular that you want to promote that's going on in Marvel right now?
Not really.
Well, I was going to say there's Xfinity.
There's a lot of things going on.
Yeah, but I could talk about Affinity for an hour.
Yeah.
Sure.
All right. Well, then. All right. So for everyone out there listening, don't let your cape get caught in the door. Have a good week. Yeah, that's my
really?
Sign off. Yes.
That's a sign up.
Hey everyone, you just listened to an episode of Superhero Speak. This is Dave. You can reach me at dave@superheroespeak.com. Also, if you're listening to this through the website, did you know you can go to iTunes and subscribe to it? So check us out there.
And this is Ben from Superhero Speak, which you can reach at ben@superheroespeak.com. And did you know you could also follow us on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/superheroespeak.
This is John, and you can reach me at john@superheroespeak.com, and if you want, there's our Twitter account, @superheroespeak.
All right. Thanks, and check us out at those spots.